The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am thrilled to invite you to Rachel Uncensored, my podcast where I get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. From personal stories to hot-button issues, we cover it all. New episodes drop every Wednesday, so make sure you tune in on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.
This episode of Beyond is brought to you by forhims.com, F-O-R-H-I-M-S.com.
Do not underestimate the power of PlayStation.
Beyond!
Beyond!
Wow! Yeah. Great job, everybody. Good job. Welcome, everybody, to Beyond episode 538. That's enough out of you.
We tied.
Everyone, you jinxed. You both owe each other sodas now. Beyond. My name is Max Scoville. I'm joined by Jonathan Dornbush.
Beyond.
And Brian Altano.
Beyond.
That is the name of the program we're doing right now. Yeah. We have a great show lined up today. We have a bunch of stuff to talk about. A bunch of huge, big Sony news dropped big time. But, this is also going to be a short episode in spite of that because we have been playing God of War,
mm-hmm.
and we are going to put up a special kind of spoiler-free God of War dedicated segment that's going to go up on April 12th at 12:01 a.m. Pacific time, the second the embargo is good to go, and we can talk about it and put it out in the open. Mm-hmm. So we are all very excited to talk about it, but if you're avoiding stuff entirely, worry not. We will not mention God of War anymore.
So you'll get two Beyonds this week. One of them is this one. You're listening to it already.
Just
congrats.
Yes.
And good number job. Two will be the God of War one. It is not spoilery. We're not doing any of that stuff.
No.
I want people to go in.
There will be a spoiler cast on its own somewhere else, but this is going to be mostly about what it's like to play the game, not story beats.
And that will be the same day that Jonathan's
review will go
up.
Same time as that podcast.
So, just pretend that Kratos came in and just ripped this episode in half and, you know, threw one.
He is that strong.
The other another week. So.
Spoilers.
He rips things in half. it's kind of a defining trait.
He hates podcasts in that game.
He probably would. Some big stuff that come out recently. We got a bunch of updates on Spider-Man, the Insomniac game.
Yes.
That was the cover story for Game Informer this month. We also got a brand new Spyro trilogy remastering that got announced. And then there's a bunch of other stuff coming out. Let's get started talking about Spider-Man. So I'm
so excited.
God, good Lord. This game looks so incredible.
Right?
This is one of those ones I just want to walk away from it and just be like, let me know when it's done. I'll take it out of the oven and I'll play it.
Yep. But I can't help myself sometimes when I read a headline or something, or I have to look at it to write those headlines. I'm like, oh man, this is so great.
It's weird. I'm way like when it came to God of War, I was like so, you know, head down and keeping away from spoilers or anything like that. Spider-Man to me, I don't know. It's like Sherlock Holmes or something. Like there's just somebody writes a new mystery for him every couple of years. So spoilers don't really matter to me. I'm more excited to see how this game comes together. It looks to me like they're getting down the most important fundamental part, which is the kind of the locomotion of interacting with that world.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Once you nail that, which I believe they're doing.
We'll all know when
we actually play it ourselves. Then you can get into all the really fun stuff like all the costumes, all the weird New York City Easter eggs. To me, every Spider-Man game is defined not only by how well the web-slinging stuff works, but how interesting it is when you touch the ground. A lot of Spider-Man games, and almost all of them, eventually push you into missions inside buildings, inside closed environments where you're not really whipping through the sky and stuff like that. And then it's about combat, it's about traversal, it's about puzzles, it's about some platforming stuff. So I'm really interested to see how that comes together, because I think in some of the best Spider-Man games ever made, that still is sort of people's second or third favorite part of the game, you know? It's like actually punching and kicking dudes, you know?
Spider-Man 2 or Ultimate Spider-Man for me, which are some of my favorites, were always very much like, I'll swing around the city for 1,000 hours and collect some balloons, but I wasn't so much worried about the story. And I agree with you, like,
yeah.
There's a certain amount, like, I don't care how much they tell me about the story beforehand of, like, who, what villains are involved or things like that, only because they can't spoil when it's going to feel like when I first swing around.
Right, and like, I think what's interesting about that is that we love those games very specifically because they hit us at a certain time of our, in our lives that was important, but also because they hit at a time before there was this sort of massive wealth of open world collectathon games. I mean, yep. the Spider-Man games that we love and remember with great nostalgia predate things like Crackdown, which is a superhero collectathon.
That's what's like really funny to look at is that Insomniac has since gone and made effectively like their big open world offering was Sunset Overdrive,
I know this is a PlayStation show, but you should absolutely play that.
That game is so rad.
Yeah.
Go check that out.
But yeah, I mean, I think that Spider-Man 2 on PS2 and GameCube and all that, like people just, the thing you talk about is it's always the swinging around. Yeah. It's always the moving around. And since then, it's funny. You look at sort of what came early last generation and you got stuff like Uncharted, which was all about climbing rocks, and then Assassin's Creed, which was all about climbing detailed buildings. and we haven't really had a proper return to form for Spider-Man. You know, that's kind of taken that stuff into account and really processed and moved from that. And it, from the sound of it, like they dug into the sort of the traversal. I was digging at Game Informer has this article up that's sort of like, it's granular details on the gameplay and how stuff comes together. And it's one of those things where you're basically reading somebody paraphrasing an instruction manual.
Right.
Like they're being like, oh, this button does this. From the sound of it though, perches are a big thing. Like it's basically like you have sort of almost like hot points around the city that, and you can stick your webbing to everything, and it sounds like pretty physics based.
Yeah.
But in this case, it's like certain things will just be they're anchor points for your
right, webbing. Right.
And then I guess if you hit L2, it'll go into like a slow motion sort of bullet timey thing, so that you're not stuck in that scenario where you're just flying around and hitting walls and stuff. Like you can actually sort of pause for a second and be like, all right, where to next?
I like that a lot. We've also, we saw some of the sort of like environmental ways in which that works right here. And if you're watching the video, just sort of like shooting onto like a steel girder and then grabbing it and yanking it, spinning it as like a helicopter, using it as a weapon.
He does hockey stops and like e-brake power slide moves, but with webbing, basically.
Yeah, there's character to all of his movement. What I love about it is you were sort of talking about how Spider-Man games tend to shepherd you into like closed off spaces and everything, but like the footage we've seen so far seems to keep you in the open world, even if it is like this is a building that's still in repair. But there are, they've talked about some of it in this Game Informer information, there will be side quests or random robberies in the city that will bring you into indoor locations, and there are those one-off sort of scenarios.
Otherwise, like 90% of New York City is constantly under heavy construction from like 4 a.m. to 4 a.m. So you'll always find stuff and running up a wall in this game.
I'm so excited. We're looking at footage from just the E3 demo, I'm still sort of taking that with a grain of salt. Game Informer has a bunch of little clips just kind of showing off little. I mean, they made a bunch of GIFs, which I appreciate.
Yep.
One thing that's really nice is that they have they're talking about the combat, and it's going to be difficult to talk about this game without comparing it to the Arkham games because I mean, they are the most recent sort of modern interpretation of really good superhero games.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But again, Spider-Man is a different character from Batman, especially that sort of heavy-handed Rocksteady version of him. And they're talking about the combat. It's combo-based ish. But they said it's sort of more acrobatic, which I like, and they also stress that there's a lot of environmental hazards you can use, which I'm so big on that. I mean,
yeah, me too.
Clearly, I've been burning through Yakuza games like that. I like hitting people with crates and boxes.
Well, I feel like in terms of games like that, I mean, Sleeping Dogs is one of the ones that sort of handled the best.
Oh,
yeah, right?
It's so much fun.
Yeah,
there's just something like the idea of using the world around you as a weapon is really fun, and it would be.
Well, and they're also really playing into the fact that Peter Parker this time around is a scientist. Like, he's a little bit older. He has a scientific career going on, so he makes a lot of gadgets for himself, and that plays into the combat, the traversal. I think they mentioned in the Game Informer stuff, like, sort of a drone spider that you can use in certain scenarios, and we've seen stuff before from E3. But yeah, it seems like there's such a variety to the combat. I like looking at the footage. I kind of get lost for a second.
It's such a joy to watch.
Yeah.
It's going to be so much fun.
Yeah, and so this is what I really want from this game is to sort of make I want New York City to just be really fun to get around, and I want a lot of things to sort of be happening dynamically. Like we're seeing here in the footage, there's a helicopter dragging a shipping crate on a web through the city. I want to see stuff like this happen often, right? Yeah. I want constantly a helicopter dragging a shipping crate held up by webbing, but just stuff in the city that you can interact with, you know, that isn't just like trucks and cars. Like bring the more you bring in like weird stuff that's happening on a rooftop or like weird construction cranes or weird like helicopters, stuff like that. Just weird kind of dynamic events that make it different than just flying through alleyways and yeah. corridors. And
it
stuff
sounds
like
there's going to be a lot that fleshes out the world in terms of like side quests and things you can do beyond the main missions. So my hope is that it does feel like a living, breathing city. And they also showed off, have you guys seen the fast travel?
The fast travel is, of course, as a nice little, you know, wink and a nod. It's not fast. It's the subway. I love that. Here's a game where you can just you can spin webs and fly across the city, but you can also take the train.
Yep.
Which is, and it's like Spider-Man just goes down into a subway station, and then it cuts to him checking his phone on the subway, just like holding onto the handrail, which is like, that's so funny.
I love it so much.
It's really cool. Yeah.
They announced that there's gonna be DLC, like story DLC called The City That Never Sleeps, which is gonna have, you know, new villains and all that. I'm kind of avoiding like actual story beats on this.
Sure. Yeah. It's a three-part thing, I think.
That sounds really fun though. But also they've announced a bunch of costumes, which I'm really excited about because Spider-Man obviously has a huge history of a lot of different costumes throughout his you know, long career. And they're already like, it's not just like, they're not just doing boring ones. They're doing Spider-Punk, who has an electric guitar that plays like, you know, he can strike a chord and does like a shockwave move.
Yeah.
There's also Wrestler Spider-Man, which is like his homemade, you know, stupid costume. And then Spider-Man Noir, who was in Shattered Dimensions
a while ago.
Yeah.
What I like about this is that like video games have been around for a very long time now, and people who have a PlayStation are, you know, maybe they're 7, maybe they're 40. Mm-hmm. Like everyone has their Spider-Man.
Yeah.
You know, like maybe yours were the like Tobey Maguire movies. Maybe it was Secret Wars. Like everyone's got I grew up with like 70s Spider-Man action figure hand-me-downs from friends and stuff like that who were like older, way older than me. And they're just like, hey, here's Spider-Man. It's just like this loose action figure with like bright cartoon colors. And then it got more muted over time. And then they emphasized more of the details in the suit and stuff like that. And getting to throw all those in there, as long as it just plays great, then I love that idea of being able to play as different Spider-Mans. Did we ever decide this?
Spider-Mans.
That's the way it goes. What's really cool though about the costume thing too, it's kind of buried in the Game Informer story, but they played the very beginning of the game, and I guess spoilers for the very beginning of the game, Peter is not in the white spider costume.
Okay.
He starts out in a traditional, like, black spider costume.
Oh, interesting.
And at some point, like, unless I read that story horribly wrong, but this is what it said, and then they had a sidebar for it, is that he makes that white spider suit, and it's somewhat related to his scientific approach, because that suit, if you look at the way it's designed, is much more, like, acrobatic. It's much more athletic in the way that the blue is sort of like a mesh fabric and all these things. So there's a story reason why he has the white spider suit.
Realistically, you would think his costume would be, like, the color of like steel girders or
you'd
something
think
like
so.
That. Like, you know, silver, maybe some exposed brick if he's in Brooklyn.
Yeah. I don't know. I think
about these things.
Stealthy, like a stealthy ninja costume
would
make sense.
Yeah. I mean, like, whatever, you look at the top of the Empire State Building and there's a red and blue guy, you're like, hey, I see that.
Yeah.
There he is.
Famous blending in color of spiders. I'm really happy about this. And we have a release date, which is September 7th.
Yes.
So, get on that. That's good
so
news.
So soon.
What do you guys think of the box cover? I actually really like it. It's minimalist. It's simple. Right? It's just like a render. The Game Informer cover itself, I want to give a shout out to those guys. They do some amazing covers over there. It's like the kind of thing that makes me piss that IGN isn't a magazine, because if it was.
We can't hire Alex Ross to do like a photo for Instagram.
Yeah. I mean, he would make a cover image and it would like fall down the blog roll in 10 minutes. We run a website. But between this and there, I believe it was the one they did for Horizon, which is just stunning original art. They're doing really cool stuff over there. Shout out to Game Informer. Love you guys.
I'm dying for this. I had this sneaking realization that this is going to be one of those years when it's really, really hard to narrow down a game of the year.
Yeah.
Which is good.
I think that I was just sort of like looking at the calendar ahead, being like, oh man, we got Spider-Man, and then there's Red Dead, and there's just a bunch of other stuff, and there's inevitably going to be things at E3 we still don't even know about.
Oh,
it's also this library of so many of them. I mean, not Red Dead, obviously, but so many of these games are PlayStation exclusive, right?
Yeah.
Like, we're going to talk about God of War tomorrow, or whatever it is in the week. Last of Us 2 is on its way.
Yeah.
Spider-Man. I mean, it's
a good time to play.
God damn.
Yeah, this is
pretty cool.
This is the era that they've kind of been building up to for a few years.
Yeah.
So it's really
All of those E3s are finally paying off.
Yeah.
Attention, Mail Beyond listeners. We have an important message from ForHims.com. 66% of men experience hair loss by age 35. By the time most folks notice, it's usually too late, so if you've noticed your hairline slowly receding or bald spots popping up, why not do something about it right now? Thanks to science, baldness can be optional. ForHims.com is a one-stop shop for hair loss, skin care, and sexual wellness that connects you with real doctors for medical-grade solutions for problems that maybe you're too embarrassed about to handle in person. That means no waiting room, no doctor visits, no snake oil pills or supplements that they sell behind the counter at gas stations. These are prescription solutions backed by actual science. You just visit ForHims.com, answer a few questions, and a doctor will review and prescribe accordingly. Then products are shipped directly and discreetly to your door. While supplies last, Beyond listeners can get a trial month for just $5 when they head to forhims.com/beyond. This would cost hundreds of dollars from a doctor or pharmacy, so $5 for your first month is a steal. Again, that's forhims.com/beyond. Thanks. Now back to the show.
So in sort of fun surprise news, just last week they announced that we're getting a full remastering, rebuild, whatever it's called, of the Spyro trilogy. Jonathan.
Did 90s nostalgia call? I'm here to answer it. Hello.
Okay. I want you to just tell us the story. They sure. sent you an egg.
So they sent me a purple egg. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure it's styrofoam. Everyone has asked me. I'm not splitting it open because one, it's a really cool thing.
Did you sit on it?
I did not sit on it. I did not put it underwater to hear it scream. I think it's styrofoam covered in purple tacks, but it looks really good. It's got a nice heft to it.
Okay.
They sent me a purple egg at the beginning of the week, and then a few other outlets got it the next day from Falcon McBob. And Falcon McBob on Twitter was at Spyro the Dragon.
Is that a character?
No, it's not a character in there.
Falcon McBob, okay.
Yeah, I still have like not figured out exactly where that name comes from. It may just be a blind spot in the Spyro lore. I don't know.
You're not up to date on Spyro lore?
I haven't gone through the full wiki.
Idiot yet. Child recollecting Star Fox characters.
His good friend Falcon McBob. But yeah, so then they sent this egg, and then they sent the egg to a few other outlets, and then more teases started to come via the Crash Bandicoot Twitter, and then finally they revealed Spyro Reignited Trilogy. It's the original three PS1 adventures coming to PS4 and Xbox One simultaneously.
And it's going
to
have all the bells and whistles for Xbox One X and PS4 Pro. It's
yes.
going to be all like beautiful
yeah.
4K.
Yeah, and if this you is... haven't seen, we had a ton of coverage of it on IGN. We didn't just have the reveal trailer and everything. We actually got to, after they got sent to us, we got to speak to the sort of two of the heads of Toys for Bob who are making this game, who have also been making Skylander since mm-hmm. it first started. We talked to them. We did a few other really cool video things. Producer of the show, Barrett Courtney, did an amazing visual comparison one-to-one of the new trailer to the original PS1 game. It is so good, and you should watch it if you haven't seen it. This is incredible. This is awesome.
So Brian and I were talking about this. We're kind of a little bit too old for Spyro.
Yeah.
It just wasn't a thing that, I don't know, it was like, at that point I was moving on to like Metal Gear and stuff, and I feel like you were obsessed with Mario still, but like for a lot of people, like yourself included, like
yeah.
that was, Spyro was your mascot.
Yeah, you know? It's one of those things, he and Crash kind of go hand in hand as like early PlayStation 1 platformer mascots, but in the way that Crash is this more 2D-esque platformer down like a corridor, either towards you or away from the camera, Spyro was more of an open world thing kind of from the start. He had this glide ability. It was more of a collectathon sort of platformer, more like Banjo-Kazooie almost. Mm-hmm. But in the way that Crash 1 was sort of a proof that they could do it and they moved on to something better, Spyro 2 is very much the good game that 1 could be.
That's always the big surprise with games is that 2 is often better than 1,
yes.
which just totally flies in the face of every other kind of media.
Yeah, and one
except for on the NES, things got weird there.
Yeah,
what didn't know is yeah, through, Zelda yeah. 2 mm-hmm. was a little bit different.
That's like Star Trek movies over there,
Castlevania
yeah.
2.
Yeah. Mm.
But yeah, Spyro.
Spyro really grew and evolved, and sort of thing where Spyro 3 is fun, but also bloated in that they try to cram too many new characters and abilities and stuff in there. But it's still a really fun series that I have a lot of fond memories of. And 2 Ripto's Rage especially is like a collectathon game I did so many times over when I was a kid.
That's awesome. I'm like excited to check this out because I remember when Crash came out being sort of almost disappointed, like even as a kid, that it was so sort of, it looked brand new, but mechanically it's kind of rudimentary.
Mm-hmm.
Like
yes.
you are just still jumping. It's, I mean, it's a runner game.
Yeah.
Whereas, yeah, but Spyro, you're like moving around freely and you're like, there's much more.
There's a lot more variety in the secrets you can kind of exactly. uncover and things like that. And there's a reward for exploring, and especially in 2 when there are several different things you can collect and more of a story through it. Whereas so, like 1 is free the dragons. So
I wonder how much stuff they're doing sort of under the hood outside of just like a cosmetic coat of paint.
Oh, yeah.
This is the full, like full overhaul. Like we got, like this is effectively a new game.
Yeah. Right. So this, we spoke to Toys for Bob and discussed sort of what they're putting into it. And visually it is pretty much they're working from like square one about like, how do we make this look visual, but
right.
still be true to what Insomniac made when they first made it. And then also, soundtrack wise, Stuart Copeland did the scores of the original games. The Police's Stuart Copeland did the scores for the original games. And they're not talking too much about like the process of it, but they're essentially reimagining it and keeping what was good about the scores, but using modern instrumentation, right, and things like that. And they're also working with as many old voice actors as they could for the game.
That's really cool.
And Spyro actually had two different voice actors in the original trilogy. One guy for the first game and then Tom Kenny, who does SpongeBob for 2 and 3. Tom Kenny was the more of the fan favorite largely, and so he's back to do for all three games.
He voiced Spyro?
Yeah.
I found about him through Mr. Show, the show. It's fantastic on that show.
Yeah.
So what I'm wondering is sort of like mechanically, I feel like it's gonna look obviously completely different. It's gonna feel pretty similar.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of little like tweaks you can do with a lot of sort of, I don't know, I'll say like vintage era 3D platforming games.
They are trying to do a lot of quality of life stuff because they even said like the original Spyro, you did camera via the triggers.
Yes,
it was L2 and R2, whereas they're like, oh no, now we have the full extra analog stick. We can really make it feel like a modern game. They wanted to keep the feel of like Spyro's run, his dash and his glide are all very much like key for people to remember. And they actually went down to Insomniac, who doesn't have any actual say in the development. They're not co-developing in any way, but they went down and showed them the game to be like, is this what you feel
ask for the father's hand in marriage.
Exactly, yeah. And so they're very much staying true, but hey, the camera's updated. Hey, like, if you're not sure what that rock moving back and forth means, they're showing you there's a wear and tear there for a reason, whereas like older graphics couldn't show you that. Things along those lines.
Toys for Bob is a really interesting studio. I think they're actually my favorite studio that I've visited. I went and did like a preview thing there for Skylanders Giants a million years ago.
Okay, yeah.
And what I love is that I remember when Skylanders came out, that was leading the charge of Toys to Life, which has since kind of like, you know, petered out.
Yeah.
But they sent out Activision sent out this press release, and they were like, it was around Toy Fair, and they were like, hey, we are about to change the gaming landscape forever. And everyone's like, what are you making, like more Guitar Hero guitars? Like, what are you doing? And then they came out and they're like, it's called Skylanders, Spyro's Adventure. And we're like, is it a new Spyro game? What is it? And then they were like, no, Spyro is like one of many characters. And I was like, who are these animals? Like, what are these?
Yeah.
And I know a lot of Spyro fans were sort of pissed off because it wasn't a Spyro game.
Yes,
it was like, yeah.
And it, you can even see like there's a different art style for that Spyro, and it's very much a more modern iteration of that Spyro. But these developers, at least like talking to them, they obviously had a love for the original Spyro.
Yeah.
And so they were coming from that place of loving him, but trying to bring him to a new audience with Skylanders. So this is a very nice full circle moment for them where they get to go back to the thing that they love in
Spyro. Yeah, I appreciate the hell out of that. To piggyback what Max was saying, like it's kind of nice that like, you know, people around your age are getting their generational nostalgia now, because us olds have had it for so long where they're like, hey, remember 8-bit Mario? He's back again. And 8-bit Mario 2, the super. Yep. Yeah, so all that. We've gotten that so many times, but finally it's like, hey, did you grow up with Crash and Spyro and a bunch of those other weird mascot platform characters?
Croc. Gex.
Croc and Gex are definitely within the next 3 years coming
Glover.
Back. Glover is not, is dead.
No, Glover.
Glover's not coming back.
Hashtag wants that, if the glove fits.
Nobody wants that weird talking hamburger helper hand.
No, thank you.
I think it's weird.
But no, I mean, I think it's really neat that like Activision, who we see as being this kind of this monolithic, like behemoth of a studio, that they're coming out and being like, oh, you loved this thing we did 20 years ago and you want more of it? You want to share it with your kids? Like you want to revisit that? Oh, well, okay. You know, as opposed to being like, it's Skylanders, you know, racing or whatever.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and
did 2 years ago.
What's cool is they bought Crash and Spyro sort of as like properties that were in the PlayStation fold, and then they went to Activision, so they became fully third party. And a lot of people, like, the original three games for each of them are very beloved, and then the games as they go on vary, like your mileage will vary on them. Some people like them, some people don't, but these original trilogies are both fondly remembered, especially for our PlayStation crowd. So it's really cool to see Spyro also getting the Crash treatment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I love it.
Yeah. I feel like maybe next year we're probably going to get like a full-fledged brand new Crash game.
Yeah, no, it totally feels like that's happening soon.
Yeah. The way Insane Trilogy did so well.
Yeah.
I feel like you don't build this entire new universe of assets and then just do a remaster and put it to bed.
Right.
Yeah. Like,
right.
I feel like there's this is testing the waters for something original.
Yeah.
Cool. So that is PS4 and Xbox One out September 21st. And wasn't there like a listing for Switch that popped up?
So there was, and then they took it down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Never know what that means. Yeah. But
Activision, when we reached out for comment, was very much like, we're talking about the Xbox One and PS4 copies. Yeah. So I doubt that's going to be a surprise. That's also coming in the 21st. But if that comes 6 months, a year from now, I wouldn't be shocked.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But that's cool. So also, I think this was announced like just this weekend at PAX East. Boss Key, Cliff Bleszinski's studio that just put out and then subsequently sort of took down Lawbreakers, the big, you know, like the kind of hero shooter that.
So they're still supporting it. They're still supporting it, but it's not.
Just, yeah, I mean, it was, yeah. It had like a, that's kind of a bummer. They made a giant multiplayer hero shooter, then nobody was playing it, yeah. So there's nothing to do. Yeah. They announced a brand new game, which is called Radical Heights, which is yet another battle royale game to, you know, join the ranks of PUBG and Fortnite. But this one is, I feel like, decidedly stupider, which I really respect. Mm-hmm. It's got this just beat you over the head 80s aesthetic. It's a free to play battle royale game. It's got a lot of kind of Smash TV elements to it. Like they frame it as a game show, which I really dig. Cause whereas Fortnite, they're like, oh, it's a zombie game, but also there's a battle royale. And you're like, okay. And then PUBG is like, you're just on this island for reasons that no one's really sure of.
In I think you're prisoners, like in Predators or whatever.
Like what the hell's going on? I don't know what the context is. In this case, they're like, yeah, if you hit somebody, money's going to fly out. You get to buy a new backpack. You're like, okay, whatever.
Right.
This is
River City Ransom rules.
Yeah. I was getting very stupid Saints Row vibes from this.
Yes.
And I dug into it, and it's actually Zach Lowery, who worked on Saints Row 3 and 4, was a Volition animation lead, is one of the creative directors over at Boss Key.
That makes sense.
I want to see what happens with this. I think it sounds awesome. They basically are also like they have a very casual approach to making games over there.
Yeah.
And they're like kind of like, hey, we know that it's a game and that theoretically people want to play it, so we're gonna try to prevent things from stopping that, and they just kind of put this on Steam Early Access. So
yeah,
it wouldn't surprise me if we saw this pop up on consoles in the immediate future.
Yeah, the way they're framing it was very much like this is a very early access thing that they're just seeing testing the waters with. And I do like that dumb aesthetic of it, of sort of like you can go on a BMX bike and jump on a trampoline and try to attack your guys that way.
I think a lot of it is obviously going to be make or break depending on how many players connect with it now.
Yes.
Because what they saw with Lawbreakers was just basically connection numbers in like the low tens towards the sort of mid.
It's like not even a full match.
And it's like, I mean, it's interesting because it's like, I find it fascinating that they sort of created an entry in a already pretty dominantly crowded hero shooter genre and then pulled away. And now they're jumping into the battle royale genre, which is, you know, the hottest thing in the world right now, but also people are kind of, They're kind of in their things. I don't know. It's sort of like when you look at like, this is a stretch, but when you look at like basketball players only wear like two different brands of shoes, right? And they're just like Nike and Reebok, and they move into those directions. And every now and then, like,
what about K-Swiss?
And they're like, well, I'm going to be the one player. And it's like, yeah, well, that's cool. I'm glad you're bringing something new to the table, but like these guys are kind of locked into their thing. So I'm interested in it. I will say, like, sort of aesthetically, I'm completely fatigued by this weird renaissance we've had of misremembering the 80s as this thing that was only that purple laser grid background with the triangle and that
So I see what you're saying. That I'm personally also totally worn out on the whole kind of blood dragon, like desert chrome, turquoise and magenta thing.
Yeah.
This one is just kind of goofy and homemade enough that I dig it. Like it has much more of like a Zombies Ate My Neighbors vibe to it than full blown, I don't know, whatever, like, you know, Contra or Narc or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, it's still a lot of neon. And I mean, I'm going to have inevitably people tweeting photos of, like, a character in that game being like, yo, Max, is this you? Because it's a guy in a Hawaiian shirt with spiky hair and, you know, Vans checkered slip-ons.
Yeah, sure. I get all the guys from PUBG if it makes you feel better.
I mean, we both
I just get Eugene Levy. Yeah. that's all I get.
Yeah, I don't know. I was alive in the 80s, right, for a lot of it. And there's a lot of cool stuff in that decade. And I think it mostly gets boiled down to purple grid triangle cyberscope or whatever the hell it is, you know, like that whole thing. And it's like that's a cool aesthetic. And the synth music that came out of that era was goddamn awesome, you know. But I think a lot of that has become like people are making secondhand versions of what they saw in Stranger Things, and that's like they're doing a cover band of a cover band.
Yep.
And so I appreciate it because that's a gorgeous aesthetic and it's fun and bright and vibrant, and I think that's so much better than if we were doing the show 10 years ago. We'd be talking about sepia toned, like, you know, brown puke brown dirt everywhere and stuff like that. So this is good that we're moving away from that and we're in this like era of purple laser beams and stuff like that. I hope people like use that exploration point as sort of like digging around in that decade and finding that there was a lot more than just the blood dragon.
It's not reinterpretive enough. Like it doesn't regurgitate it. Like I feel like you look at, I remember like the first time I heard the term nostalgia in like, you know, I don't know, growing up, I always associated it with like crappy gift stores that sold like Happy Days themed, you know, wind up toys. Like it was very 50s centric, and you're always like, oh, it's like a 50s diner. And like, yeah, there was a plenty of stuff that was kind of like sticking in that same, like, you know, Arthur Fonzarelli wheelhouse.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you also had stuff like punk that was reinterpreting the sort of pompadour rockabilly like aesthetic and being like, okay, well, what if you, you know, pumped more voltage and less budget into that?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what the reinterpreted version of like of the 80s aesthetic is, like what the sort of modern punk is of that. But
mm-hmm.
I feel like we kind of stay too close to the – anyway, we're getting out of the weeds here. But yeah, Radical
we're
Heights.
We're going a little art school.
Yeah.
Early access just on PC right now. Yeah. But we'll see what happens.
I'd be very surprised if that did not show up on PS4 at some point.
Yeah, so you can play that right now, right?
Yeah, I think it's just out. Yeah.
Yeah, it's out. So it's on Steam. Go check it out.
Yeah. Also out this week, actually on a PlayStation device, a bunch of games coming out this week. Real quick, first of all, there's a game called Extinction, which is published by Iron Galaxy, the guys who did Killer Instinct. And they teased this at E3 last year. And the hook is pretty much it's a third-person action game that is very Attack on Titan-y. You're going up against these giant, like, colossi, these big kind of ogres. And you have to climb them. And it's not like a Shadow of the Colossus game. It's much more, I don't know. It feels more like a Shadow of Mordor, but with, like almost Spider-Man-esque traversal.
Yeah. It feels like it takes place in Shrek.
It's very Shrek-y. It's got a very kind of cartoon-y.
Sign me up.
Yeah.
And it's got a lot of stuff going for it. It's kind of all over the place.
I think you said it best. Oh, you can climb up that dude's butt. You said it best. This feels like a double A game.
Yeah, you know, yeah.
This reminds me of that like PS3 THQ era of games that we don't see a lot of anymore because games are either massive over budget AAA games or they're darling indies or they're like kind of crappy iOS.
Yeah, this feels almost like a HD remaster of a game that would have come out 10 years ago. And I don't mean that in a bad way at all. In the same way that I played like the campaign for Titanfall and I was like, or Titanfall 2, and I was like, hey, this feels like a game I would have played in high school. There's something fun about it. It's just like a sort of simple, straightforward thing. This is incredibly arcadey, which I think cool. Like a select, you know, slice of people is going to get like super into this game. Mm-hmm. Maybe not speedrunners per se, but people who like to get really good at a system.
Yeah.
Because the traversal is really, it's really interesting.
It's quick and snappy. Yeah. And you almost feels like a superhero game. Like it's got this vaguely medieval setting at times, but then the character like runs at hyper speed and can, you know, run up the sides of buildings and stuff like that.
And it's not like laborious to get up.
Right.
Like it's not like Shadow of the Colossus where you're trying to figure out a puzzle to get,
No, I would say the traversal feels more like an Infamous type game, like a prototype than it does. But it's in a weird spot, right? Like, I mean, it comes out the same month as God of War.
Yeah.
Which is a third-person action game with some sort of...
It's weight. Another game where you fight big, huge monsters and stuff like that.
And then the same year as Spider-Man. So it's... I don't know where it's going to find its place. I mean, obviously, they had to get the game out at some point, but maybe there's something in there for you. It didn't really grab me. I might give it another chance, but it's out. You can play it.
Yeah.
There's that.
No, it's definitely... I think it's neat. So check that out. Also out this week on PS4, Owlboy, which was a beloved Metroidvania that I think Chloe Rad gave a, would she give a 10 to that?
Very high.
I think a 9.
It was up there. It was a big one.
Played this recently.
That's on Switch. It came out on Switch a couple weeks ago and was on PC before that. Really, really neat little game.
Yeah, pixel art is just stunning.
It's gorgeous.
It's really good.
It gave me like serious Minish Cap vibes.
Yes.
From Legend of Zelda, which is odd because I don't ever really think about that game as having its own particular aesthetic, but there's something specifically Game Boy Advance-y about how this looks rather than like sort of classic 16-bit.
Yeah.
Well, we're constantly doing like, you know, 4K 60 frame per second graphics comparison videos here at IGN. We just talked about Spyro, which is getting this massive remaster and stuff like that. And you probably bought a really nice TV over the last few years to play your video games on because it's great to do that. It's hard to understate how awesome, and maybe it's just because I'm old, but how awesome really vibrant, really great pixel art looks on a great TV. Like it just, there's something incredible about that. As a kid who grew up with like an 80s TV with like weird rounded edges that always looked kind of smoky and there was like kind of like scan lines through it and stuff like that. Like, and I know that's an aesthetic people love.
Yeah.
In fact, people try to recapture that through emulation and it doesn't even come close. So they go out and they find SD TVs in the garbage and do all that.
No, I think standard definition and CRT technology really hurt pixel art. Like it was really doing it a disservice. On the other hand, I think it did early 3D a lot of favors.
Yeah.
Where you go back and you play something like, I don't know, Silent Hill and you're like, oh, this is spooky, or like Metal Gear. You're like, oh, it's so grimy. and then you see that running on like a, you know, big HD TV, and you're like, ah, they're all made of paper mache. What is this?
It loses that grunge.
Yeah. I mean, gorgeous pixel art is not easy to make. People look at it as sort of like, oh, it's a 2D game.
It's low budget.
I've heard thrown around a lot in the comments section on under the stuff we publish on IGN and elsewhere, you know, that like 2D games should be cheaper, or they should be, I mean, I don't think that like this game should be $60 per se, because it doesn't really feel like that once you actually get into the nuts and bolts of it.
Yeah.
But like really great pixel art is not easy to make. It is, there's some intense artistry behind that, and actually designing it and creating characters is one thing, but making sure the animation doesn't look rigid is really, really difficult. Not saying it's easy to do in 3D games, but there's a specific talent and trait that works into the, like the sort of tapestry here. And so it's really, really good to see a team nail that, because it's also so easy to make just the crappy version of that. We've seen this pixel art renaissance over the last 10 years, and it's gone in so many different directions, and Owlboy just completely nails it.
Yeah.
There's a vibrancy to the characters, and they're all very unique. The character aesthetic specifically, I played through the first like 3 or 4 hours on Switch, and just seeing this wide cast of very funny singular people throughout like just the first couple hours, like, oh, there's something special to the craft of this game.
It's really charming. Also, it's interesting to play a Metroidvania where you're not like nickel and dimed on your ability to fly. Like that's kind of a key mechanic, is that you can fly everywhere. And normally, you know, Metroidvania, you gotta jump a bunch, you gotta wall run or whatever, or maybe you get like
unlock a triple jump or,
but in this one they're like, you're an owl boy, you can fly. And you're like, really? And then the real kind of the sort of weapons and upgrades you get is you pick up different characters.
Yeah.
Which is really kind of cruel and warped, but you're like, you'll be like, oh, this is the professor who's got a rocket launcher or whatever. You gotta just carry him around by his ass and you know, you got your talons in his back, and then there's a whole mechanics built around that, but really neat game. So check that out. There's a game coming out this week called Dusty Raging Fist, which looks, and I don't mean this in a bad way. It looks like a Vanillaware game, but with furries. So you've got a bunch of very lovingly hand-rendered beat 'em up characters running through like gorgeous hand-painted backdrops and beating the crap out of things, but they're all like anthropomorphic animals.
Oh.
So, you know, that's definitely a thing for some people. There's a bunch of like kind of smaller like platform games coming out this week.
It cut to me like,
I was just going to say, if the Shrek design of Extinction's characters don't do it for you, you can also.
Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah. Dusty Raging Fist is the name that they went with. There's actually a huge pile of games that came out this week. We don't have time to talk about all of them because we've got to duck out of here and talk about God of War shortly. But a bunch of PlayStation VR stuff came out, not so quietly or too quietly. We talked about Crisis on the Planet of the Apes last week, and the PR people actually hit us up and got us copies of that. We still haven't had a chance to sit down and play it, or stand up and move your living room around and play it or whatever. But I looked around, and it is being received fairly well.
Cool.
As far as licensed tie-ins go, apparently it's got a lot of the kind of the polish you would expect for a licensed game, and it's a VR game about being an ape with a machine gun, so worth checking out. Also out is Time Carnage, which is like a very arcadey shoot the things kind of thing, except there's dinosaurs everywhere, so if you want to shoot a Tyrannosaurus in the face in VR, you can do that.
Why don't they bring back Dino Crisis? Why won't they?
I really wish. Dude, give me Dino Crisis in the Resident Evil 7.
Yeah, give that the Resident Evil 7 treatment, please. I just want those dinosaurs.
There is a game called Super Amazeballs, which sounds awful when you read it with your eyes, but it's basically Marble Madness in VR. And it's, when they say maze balls, they mean literally a maze with balls in it.
Balls.
Mm-hmm. So you're doing one of those 3D like maze puzzles, which I think is actually kind of cool. So it's a nice change of pace.
We have Raging Fist and a maze balls this
pretty
week?
Much. Yeah. And then there's also Rick and Morty Virtual Rickality, which I know people were, you know,
how does the Rick and Morty game have the least sexual title of all the games?
Yeah, that's
go
weird.
Figure. But that was basically compared to Job Simulator, but with Rick and Morty characters. So if that sounds fun for you, it is now finally on PlayStation VR. It's been on like Vive and Oculus forever. Also, if you skipped it, please check out Accounting Plus. Justin Roiland, who does plays Rick and Morty, worked on that. It's very cool. And then finally, Operation Warcade, which is I saw the graphics for this, and I was like, ooh, this looks awful. And I like looked at, I dug a little bit deeper, and then I figured out that it's basically a virtual reality version of like those old light gun games, like Operation Wolf or Operation Thunderbolt, the weird Gulf War, you know, post Rambo, like arcade cabinets, except it's all in 3D. So you're like shooting tanks and machine guns and stuff, and it's
that's really
VR, but like kind of on rails. But there's so if you don't mind the, you know, Desert Storm aesthetic, then there you go. So yeah, head over to the PlayStation blog and check out the drop. They've got a bunch of other stuff on there. Stay tuned because this is only the first half of this week's episode. We're putting up the other half at 12:01 a.m. Pacific time on the 12th, and we are going to be just talking about God of War. No spoilers, just mechanics, just how we feel about it. So tune in for that. To be continued.
Beyond.
Here's a quick question for you. How did you sleep last night? If your battle for a good night's sleep feels relentless, I have the answer. It's a podcast called Sleepwave, with meditations and hypnosis created to help you fall asleep. My relaxation techniques will help you feel calm and ready for sleep with soft music that will help you fall asleep in minutes. Most listeners never hear the end of an episode. So search Sleepwave on your favorite podcast app and find out why over 1 million people have fallen asleep to my voice.
Hi, I'm Alexis Ohanian. You may know me as one of the co-founders of Reddit, but more recently, a large part of my identity is being a father to my two wonderful daughters. In my podcast, Business Dad, I'm hoping to open up the conversation about balancing careers and family. The one thing I constantly hear successful people say, without fail, is that they wish they'd spent more time with their kids. That's time no one can get back. So I decided to create Business Dad, to engage in the conversation about how we're spending our time now, providing a forum for successful dads to share their joys and challenges of being a working parent. You'll get to hear from a wide range of business dads, from Rainn Wilson and Guy Raz to Todd Carmichael and Shane Battier. And while this podcast will talk about business and will definitely be featuring dads, I think everyone can learn something from these incredible conversations as we unpack the expectations we all have about careers, relationships, and ourselves. Business Dad is available now, so be sure to listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.